This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
So I'm Diane Bloomfield. I have been living in Jerusalem for over 35 years. I was a student at Pardes in the 80s and learned here for many years and taught here for a few years. And then I began a journey of, hi, Mayor. It's not a redeemed room, Mayor.
It's not redeemed.
Reality and
you got it.
It's not redeemed. We're in exile, see? That's how it is. There's Torah and everything. I'm just going to turn these lights off because I don't think we really need them. Okay, so I've been involved in the world of learning Torah and also developing ways to how to connect the world of Torah study to the world of the body. So there's a whole lot there, but we have the opportunity to learn one of the deepest books of the Torah, and I would have loved to have been in your whole seminar all week long. It looks like amazing teachers and amazing classes, so I'm jumping in towards the end. And what usually happens in Torah classes is everything connects, right? Everything you're learning in one class, the next teacher teaches it. So I don't know what you've been learning enough to really know, but, you know, fill me in when we go through stuff of how it's connecting. I wish I could hear from everybody what it's like, but we're going to use our time to learn. So I'm going to just keep going. Okay, so we're going to start with this statement about the book of Esther, because we're going to be looking at revealing the hidden Aleph through the book of Esther. Okay, the book that we read on Purim. I don't even know people's backgrounds, right? I wish I could hear, like, have you been learning Torah your whole life? Is this your first day of Torah study? Is it somewhere in between?
Challenge for you, right?
It's okay, though.
I would say we're all in between.
You're all in between.
I think we're all on a journey, aren't we?
You're all in a journey. Okay, okay. It's going to come out. It's fun for me. Okay, so we have this teaching from the Talmud, the Yerushalmi Talmud, that says, "Hanevi'im v'ketuvim atidim lehibatel." In the future, the prophets and the writings will become, they'll be annulled. They won't be relevant. V'chameshet sifrei Torah einan atidim lehibatel. But the five books of Moses are always going to be relevant and real, and the Word of God alive. Mata'ama. Okay, it goes on. Af Megillat Esther v'Hilchot Einan Atidin Ipatel. But Megillat Esther is never going to be like the other prophets, that it's going to be batel. Batel means no longer real. Megillat Esther is going to be always relevant. So that's what our subject, we're going to be looking at what is, this is from the Yerushalmi, the Megillah, the Yerushalmi Megillah, Daf Aleph, says Aleph Hey, that doesn't make that much sense to me. Megillah Aleph, why would it be Hey? Amud Hey maybe? I'm not sure actually how, okay, Yerushalmi. Also the Rambam says the same thing. Megillat Esther is always going to exist. So we might wonder, right? The holiday of Purim, the book of Esther. What's unusual about the book of Esther in the books of Torah?
God's name
isn't appeared, right? We know that God's name doesn't appear. So Dafka, the one that God's name doesn't appear, is the one that's going to last forever. So this is a class, this is a week, the day about redemption, Geula. And this is a book about some of the secrets of Geulah and what the book of Esther has to do with it. Why is the book of Esther above the prophet Yeshayahu, Yechezkel, more than the great prophets of Israel? The book of Esther is going to be always relevant. So we're going to look a little bit into why, right? The holiday of Purim doesn't seem like the deepest holiday on the surface, right? It seems a little bit like a carnival on the surface. So what's so deep about the book of Esther? So we're going to look at this through the lens of some midrash and the lens of chassidut. So I'm going to be bringing some teachings from the Sfat Emet. Has anyone here ever learned Sfat Emet? Ooh, I'm excited about that. Okay, Svat Emet is the Rebbe from Gur, Poland, who lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s. I'll talk more about him in a minute. But it's a book that I've been very immersed in many years, and he has a lot to tell us about some of the secret teachings of the Book of Esther. But to begin with, we're just going to, like, sometimes I feel like when I teach, I'm very focused on the Hebrew letters. And sometimes I feel like this, like Sesame Street, this class is brought to you by the letter Aleph. Okay? By the letter Aleph and by the letter Bet. And in truth, yeah. We're good. See, we started teaching the Book of Esther and everything came together. That's all it takes, a little Torah. A little Torah. A little Torah. So, let us open our eyes and take a look at what we call the Book of Esther. And I have a big hint on the board here, right? So, right? No, I'm not making it subtle. So we call it Megillat Esther. Megillat Esther. Does somebody want to tell me if you saw this word, you were teaching Hebrew school, what does it mean? What does Megillat Esther mean? What's the name in Hebrew of the book mean?
Scroll.
Yeah. The scroll of Esther. Megillah is a scroll. A Megillah is a scroll. But what else do we see? Now we're going to go a little bit. You know, there's a teaching that God created the world with the Hebrew letters. People learned this before? Yes. Okay. No. This is. I'm just getting a little sad because I needed to, like, where am I starting with some of you? You know what I mean? It says God created the world with the Hebrew letters. This is why learning with Hebrew and as much as possible in Hebrew is very revelatory, because the Hebrew letters are full of secrets. We have, just to show you a little hint to that, of how we get this idea that God created the world with the Hebrew letters, we have the very first verse of the Torah, right? Breshit bara Elokim et. What does the pasuk usually say? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God created Bereshit Bara Elohim et Hashamayim va'aretz. I left it off at et. Why?
The first and the last letter.
Pardon?
The first.
Et is the first and the last letter of the alphabet. Et, a lot of times, if you're learning Hebrew for the first time, your teachers will tell you et has no meaning. Et is just a word that marks that a noun is coming. You open up your eyes with a little bit of Hasidic or deeper looking, and et has perhaps maybe the most important word in the Torah. Why? Because the way we can understand this verse is God created, in the beginning, God created
everything
from the beginning till the end. Thank you. Right, what other word do we have that hints at, what the word emet, right? Emet. If we put a mem in the middle, what's that mean?
Truth.
Truth. And what is the word emet? You already see this. Tell me your name again, because your tag is hiding, which is appropriate for this class. Okay, because Esther hid her name too. Okay, Judith. So Aleph, Mem, Taf, if we were to do that, Emet, beginning, end, middle. The Hebrew letters are telling us what the word means. It means from the beginning till the end and everything. The Mem in the middle, Aim, you could say Aim is mother. Mem, Taf is death, from birth to death. There's a lot to play with. But here we're just saying God created the world with the Hebrew letters. Meaning, the Hebrew letters existed before the world existed. They have something to do with God's wisdom that he's putting in the world. And everything in the world, according to this way of looking at it, which is very deep in the text, everything in the world is full of Hebrew letters. Everything's made of Hebrew letters. Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav would say, our bodies are made of Hebrew letters, and we need to read the Hebrew letters in our body. This is some of the work I do with Torah yoga. But everything in the world is made of Hebrew letters, and the Hebrew letters are the wisdom of the world. So when we look at the Hebrew and we see a word, we're not just looking at a translation, we're looking at what's the deeper meaning of the Hebrew word. Okay, I'm going to invite you to sit up straight and put your feet on the floor. And I'm going to have you roll your shoulders back. I'm going to have you roll your shoulders back for a minute. Roll your shoulders back. Okay? We know that the Megillat Esther is the most closely related to our reality, which means in our reality there's hidden olives, whatever that means. Okay? So roll your shoulders back. Stretch your arms down. Take your hands out to the side. I heard you guys were out late. That means there's tiredness in the room. Stretch your arms out to the side. Try to widen your chest for a moment and breathe. Breathe and open your chest. Feel your nishima, which means soul, which means breath. Feel your breath. Turn your palms to face upward. She'ifa, raise your hands. See if you can invite a little bit of nishima into the body to open the body to be more aware. And take the hands out to the sides and all the way down. Ve'od pam, roll your shoulders back. Feel your feet here on the earth. We're studying Megillat Esther, which means we're studying ourselves. Okay, shoulders are going back. Eyes are going a little bit inward. Take your hands out again to the sides. Rotate your hands up. Extend your hands up. Have your palms touch, thumbs interlacing, and reach up. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes for one moment and breathe and feel and see if you can soften your eyes and see your whole body as a field of wisdom that's going to be open to what we're going to be looking at. Take your hands out to the sides and all the way down. Okay, so I learned Kabbalah many years, and one of my teachers said that when we're studying Kabbalah, we have to have our eyes half closed. Now, it doesn't mean half sleeping, right? It means inward, inwardly gazing. There's something deep going on here with this letter Aleph. Okay, this comes from the Zohar. What is the letter Aleph? So from your little glance, without we can read it all, but could somebody tell me what you learned from that Midrash? What's the story of the letter Aleph? What's the story of the Midrash? Please.
So it's very proud of being the first, but, and it's the first word in the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
But that's like seems like that's a consolation prize to it.
Okay, consolation prize, yeah. Okay, yep.
The world was created for the wisdom of Torah.
So yes.
The world, the Bet, starts the story.
Okay. Okay, so the world was created for the sake of Torah, and we're learning that the Aleph is Torah because it begins the Ten Commandments, right? The Torah begins with Breishit. So when we say Torah, what do we mean? Right? But the Torah, the giving of the Ten Commandments, begins with the letter Aleph. So it says all the letters lined up and wanted to be the first. Let's just take for a minute, because I think we get a hint of the Aleph from the Bet. Right? The Bet itself is hinting at the Aleph. What's the story? You say to the Bet, God chooses the Bet. He chooses the Bet for many reasons. One, it's two. The Bet is two. This is a world where duality. God is a world of one. God is one. Shema Yisrael, this is what we say. One is God. First thing we can say about Aleph, it's definitely something to do with God because it's one. It's Echad. But the world doesn't manifest looking like Echad, right? It doesn't. There's so much diversity and conflict. The world begins with Bet. So earlier in the Midrash, it says the world begins with Bet because Bet is Bracha. Because Bet is Bracha. Bracha means things are going to increase. Things are going to grow. Right? There's going to be diversity that's going to come out of this oneness. You say to the Bet says, I want to start the world. God chooses the Bet. And God says, and that you say to the Bet, who created you? What does the Bet answer? This is where we start getting our first glimpse from the Midrash. This isn't Kabbalah. This is classic Jewish text. That's why it says not only Kabbalah. Right? This is like meat and potatoes of Jewish learning. So what is the Bet? What does the Bet say when they say, who created you?
God created.
He doesn't say God, does he?
The one above.
The one above, right? He point with his pointer. Oh, he says, okay. Okay, first it says, that which is above created you. And he says, Mashmo. Yeah, he points Hashem Shmo. What's he pointing to, though? He's pointing to what?
The Aleph.
He's pointing to the Aleph. He says, what's his name? What's God's name? What does name mean in Hebrew? Shame? Essence. It also means, what else does shame? You were saying things are lost in translation. That's my middle name. Okay? My whole work is about Hebrew and what it has. What is shame? Shame means name. What else does shame mean if we change the name? There. The sham. Shay means sham. What does sham indicate? In other words, we're going somewhere. We have a purpose here. Sham, our name, is our purpose. This is the Kiva Tates. Our name is our purpose. Shame is in the middle of the word nishama. Nishama means soul, meaning in your soul is your name. If you look in your soul, you'll find your name. If you look in your name, you'll find your soul. That's why Hebrew names are so important. But here he's saying Hashem Shmo, right? God, he says, that's the one who created me. The Aleph is the one who created. This is his name. Aleph is God's name. Okay? Something so secret about the letter Aleph, it's God's name. So then the Aleph says, I want to be the first, because what begins creation is going to color all of creation, and I want to be that. I want you to be here, God. I want you to be in the beginning. I want everyone to see you from the very beginning. But God says, don't worry. The whole world, as somebody pointed out, the Midrash says, is for your sake. The whole world is for your sake. 26 generations later, he brings the Aleph finally comes into creation through Anochi, through the word Anochi. I am the Lord your God. So that's where we get the revelation of the oneness of God in the world. There's a world of duality. There's a world of hiddenness. We don't see God. There's a world of galut. And then the Torah comes and says, I'm going to reveal the ideal. I'm going to reveal the oneness of the world. The fact that there's a unity under this world, but it's hidden and you have to find it. And the Torah is what helps you find it. They say that the book of Esther is a second receiving of the Torah. We received the Torah at Har Sinai, and the Jews in the story of Purim received it again. They received it out of love. They received it from themselves. They understood it. So Aleph is God's name. So let's go a little deeper into the Aleph. Why is that Aleph? Give me reasons why the Aleph tells us about God. Yes. Okay, thank you. It's got two yuds in it. Okay, it's got an upper yud and a lower yud. What else does it have in it? This is a letter as well. Hebrew letters are made up of other letters. The only letter, it's got a vav. It's got two yuds and a vav. Okay, so there's a yud and a vav. We're going to play with this for a second. So the Aleph is oneness. The Aleph is God's name. How can we see God's name hidden in the letter Aleph, in what we're beginning to see now? So Yud, we're going to look at a little deeper in a minute too. Yud is number 10 in Gematria. Have people here heard about Gematria? Okay. Just if I say anything that, please, if I say anything that you don't know, just say, I don't know what that is, right? I may be talking way too simply for some of you and way not, and I just can't know that yet, right? So Aleph, Yud is 10. Yud is 10. There's two tens. Sorry, this is a vav, not a nun. And vav is 6. Sorry, this is 10, 10, and 6. Very messy. Okay, 10, 10, and 6. Anyone want to do the math?
26.
26. Okay, so the letter Aleph. First of all, he just said, he waited 26 generations. So that's already like, okay, 26 generations. Yes. That's already connected. Yes. Okay. So the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, which I won't spell out, Yud, 10, Hey, 5, Yud, Vav, 6, Hey, 5, 26. So it's hidden also in God's name. In other words, Aleph is God's name showing up in a Hebrew letter. Showing up in a Hebrew letter. Why? Because Yud Kei Vav Kei is so big, so Ein Sof. The world, God is Ein Sof. The basic problem of creation is being hinted at here. Ein Sof wants to create a world that isn't all Ein Sof, that has different parts, that isn't just one big oneness, that appears to be diverse. So Ein Sof has to come in through his tools. And his tools are the letters. So he comes in through the letter Aleph. He dresses up as the letter Aleph. Aleph is God dressed up. Okay, but inside the Aleph, there's other things masquerading, right? There's other parts of God that are masquerading. Just make sure this is working. I'll check it. Okay, yep. I think I'm doing it. Okay, what else? Yud. There's a yud. There's an upper yud. There's a lower yud. And they're connected. If you just look at the shape, if we were to study, we can do this in yoga, okay? I do it sometimes. I don't usually work with the letters. I work with ideas. But you could do this with the letters. There's a higher yud. There's a lower yud. And there's the spine. There's the vav, which means six, okay? What is six? 6 days of creation. And connection. Vav is v, and. Yud and yud. Yud and yud, that's aleph. Okay, what is yud? Got a little bit more in the playing with these letters, just to open up the letter aleph a little bit, and then we're going to dive into the book of Esther with this. Okay, if you really get lost, tell me. I'm trying to watch to see, is it making sense? Okay, so we have the yud. What's yud?
Ten.
Ten. What's ten? Okay, Ten Commandments. What else do we have ten of?
Plagues.
Ten plagues, very connected. What else do we have ten of?
Ten sayings.
So you guys, that was beautiful. You went backwards in order because the commandments, the plagues and the sayings. We could reverse that and say, it says that God created the world with ten utterances. Then the world wasn't going the way it was supposed to go, so God brought in ten plagues to readjust things, to readjust that world. Then once it was prepared, he brought in the ten Dibrot. They're not even called commandments, by the way, in Hebrew. I don't know how to deal with this. They're called dibrot. Words. Dibur. Things. Right? This is God's revealed word. It was hidden in Bereishit.
Also,
yeah.
I think it's 10 generations from Adam.
Yes. From yes. 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 You see 10. Every time we're looking at creation, 10. This is 10, and there's 10 trials to Abraham, and there's 10. You have to start looking for 10. Why? What is 10? What else? And let's go a little bit into Kabbalah. So God creates, God creates the world with 10. Why? According to the Maharal, 10, Maharal of Prague, 10 is the secret of one, oneness in diversity. Because you have one, but it's become diverse. He has a whole teaching on it. 10 means this one God wants to come into a world to make it possible to have diversity, but we have to remember that it's all really one. It's a big paradox. So 10 is the unit that represents God's oneness in diversity. And that's why it shows up in all of creation. Because God is saying, I'm really one, but I'm going to dress up as 10. And one of the ways God dresses up as 10 in Kabbalah is called what? 10 Sfirot. Has people heard of the 10 Sfirot? I'm going to open the door to Kabbalah a little bit here. Right? What are the 10 Sfirot? There are 10
emanations
would be a really good translation. Thank you. That would be a great way to talk about it. 10 emanations of Ein Sof, of infinity, into this world, with which God creates the world. So 10 emanations are called the Sfirot. They're called God's way of coming into the world. They have to, I'll just name Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, loving kindness, strength, balance, victory, all kinds. You could endless study on what the 10 Sfirot is, but that's where we see the 10. So here, what do we have? Hinted at the letter Aleph. I told you we could spend our whole lives here, okay? This is a story. This is like a Chinese letter that tells a story. Not that I know anything about how to read Chinese, right? It's telling us there's a Yud that's up above. There's a higher world that wants to come into this world. It comes in through the world of six, which is the world of the 6 days of creation. It's brought down into the lower world, into our world of Yud, so that it's like a drawing down of the higher worlds into the lower worlds. You know, there's a verse we say every day when we pray, Potech et yadecha. Who knows what that means?
Open
your hands, right? Open your hands, umaspi lechol chai ratzon. Open your hands, yadecha. Sorry, yadecha. Okay, open your hands, and I will satisfy every living creature. Right? That sounds to me like redemption, if we're talking about redemption. A reality where everyone is satisfied. Open your hands. If we look at it in English, I mean, I don't want to be insulting, but I'm such a chassid of Hebrew. Open your hands so that you receive, first of all, 10, okay? We're created to do things in the world through 10 fingers, 10. That's why when, you know, I have a stepdaughter who has 4 fingers instead of 5. That's a major different way to go through the world. Major, right? So 10, we get really happy when a baby has 10. Why? Because that's how God created us to be in the world. So we have, 1 second. So Svat Emet, who we haven't introduced formally yet, says, Mazapoteach et yadecha? He says, open your yuds, Svat Emet. Open your yuds. What does that mean, open your yuds? Poteach et yudecha. Open your yuds. Because yuds are God consciousness. Open up your consciousness. What is redemption? It's a matter of linking the real to the ideal, linking this world to God. Linking this world to God is opening up God consciousness. We're supposed to reveal the hidden Aleph in this world. We're supposed to reveal how the upper yud is connected to the lower world. The upper worlds are connected to the lower worlds. That's the letter yud. Yes.
The other thing that I see in that Aleph is
yes, good.
Yuds are equal and opposite.
Okay, beautiful. Wow. Okay.
So that could be wow. Female, it could be wow. Upper world, reality.
Wow. Beautiful. There is no end to learning these. No end, right? Because they say this world is actually the opposite of the world to come. What is the book of Esther? What's the major thing that happens in the book of Esther? Everything turns upside down. Right? They're opposite. We thought it was this way. It's actually absolutely the other way. We thought Haman had power. It's absolutely the other way. It's a nahafohu. It's a transformation of reality. Beautiful. So it's right there. Do you see how sad it is if we don't have Hebrew? I mean, this whole lesson is not possible without, and you don't need to know a lot of Hebrew. You know, if you have one letter, you teach it to your kids in Hebrew school. I taught in Hebrew school for a few years. And here, there you have it, right? The whole Torah on one. So there's way more to do about the Yud. I'm going to go a little farther, but, you know, it's like you go in and then you just keep going deeper. Right? I'm actually writing another book. It's called Playing with Torah, and I have chapters on the letter Yud right now. Okay? Because the letter Yud is also... I'm just going to go a little bit farther with this. Okay? Because I'm... Yud. The letter Yud. Okay? The letter Yud is considered to be Chochmah, wisdom. Okay, let me just see what I want to say about this. Give me 1 second. But really the letter Yud, okay, it's written like this in the Torah and there's a lot of meaning to it. But the letter Yud, what is really the letter Yud? It's an infinitesimally small point. It's a point. It's the smallest point you can make. It's got no dimensions. Right? If you write out the letter Yud, what you do is you take that point and you bring it into a one-dimensional reality. You bring it down to the Vav. Then you spread it out into two-dimensional reality. You bring it out into the Dalet. And you start taking the Yud into the world. The Yud itself is considered to be the raw material of every letter. Why? Because every letter is made from point. It's a point being drawn out. So this Yud, which is Svirot, which is the 10 utterances, which is the 10 commandments, is the point inside every letter. Every letter is the letter Yud, and when it's drawn out, it becomes all the other letters. And all the other letters are in their essence, Yud. And the Yud itself here points upward. See this little pointer? The letter Yud is also saying, I'm just a point, but I'm pointing up. I'm such a small point, you can't even really see me. And at the very top of that point is even a smaller point saying, really, I can't tell you what's up there. Because that's why it starts with Bet. Because really, we can't really know what that is. We can't really know what the letter Aleph really is because it's really pointing to infinity. It's really pointing. So we do, God's very nice to us. He starts the world with a bite, right? It's got like a nice base. It's got some walls. It's more grounded. Okay, so that's, anyone want to, what's the sound of the letter Aleph?
Silent.
It's silent. Okay, so I'm going to ask us for one moment to just sit again with our feet on the floor. I'm going to ask you to sit straight for a moment. Okay, close your eyes. Feel the base of your body sitting here like the base of the bat. Bring your awareness from outside to inside. And take a moment just to breathe, right? Because the Aleph is quiet. We're using a lot of words, but it's quiet. So take a moment to feel a little bit of the silence of the Aleph. Then I'm going to ask you just to consider what we've just begun to peek at, I would say, in terms of some of the deeper ways to look at Hebrew and letters. And notice if there's any, like any one point, no pun intended, about the letter Aleph that you're understanding that's clear to you. Just maybe one point. And let's open our eyes. Okay. Would anyone like just to share one thing you see or one thing you understand about the Aleph, please?
Well, I was just thinking of the Yudis, which is not the correct way to say the plural Yud, I guess. They're holding up the spine, you know, the above.
Nice.
You know, they're encapsulating their
frame. Beautiful. Means, sure. What does it mean, maybe? The spiritual is holding up the physical?
Yeah.
God's holding up the physical world? Beautiful. This is what you call there's no end to what... The, okay, please. Thank you.
It's
anyone else have...
A pulling.
Meaning?
So it pulls those directions.
Ah, nice. Okay. So this is already a Rashi who says we are physical and we are spiritual and we have to be both. We have to be physical and we have to be spiritual to balance out all of creation. Human beings, that's our role. Okay, so everybody, we're going to now turn to the book of Esther. Okay? We're going to look at one... Book of Esther. The Book of Esther. Okay. You'd rather do the Torah yoga.
I'm just they wanted
or
to
Esther out. Okay. That's okay. Okay. So it's good. So the Book of Esther. The revealing of the hidden Aleph. How is this in the Book of Esther? So I want you to look at one place where it shows up. Okay, and then we're going to go into a Sephardimet teaching. But turn to page, are there pages on this?
On the
311 on the Megillah on the bottom. It says 311 at the bottom.
We're going to the actual Megillah.
Oh, it's the third page.
The third page of the Megillah,
right,
where it says chapter. It's on the right side of the page. This is just a funny way that they laid it out, so it's a little harder for me to, I'm not used to it.
It's a continuation, so it's Parakbet.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you one second. Okay, verse 17. Okay, Parak Bet, verse 17. So we're looking at what does the book of Esther have to do with revealing the hidden Aleph? What does Esther have to do with the hidden Aleph? So if we just read one verse, Yudzayin, I'm going to read it in Hebrew. Ve'ehav hamenet et Esther. The king loved Esther, mikol anashim, v'tisachin v'chesed, she aroused a great sense of grace and love before him. We call it the Tulo from all the virgins. Vayasem keter malchut berosha. Vayamlichea tachat vashti. He placed a keter malchut on her head. So the king, right? We know that in the book of Esther, there's a big secret here because a lot of the times it will talk about Hamelech. And it's really a hint already at Hamelech. Right? It's really hinting at God. So you have to watch carefully. But the king places, when it says Achashverosh, you know it's Achashverosh. But God is playing under the surface in the whole book. So when it says he places Keter Malchut, right, on her head, those of you who know some Hebrew, what does Keter Malchut mean?
The
crown of the kingship. Right? How do they translate it in English?
The royal crown.
So here, I'm so sorry, people might be offended. So we're going to look at it in Hebrew for one moment. Keter Malchut. Okay, so we talked about the 10 Sfirot. God comes into the world, the hidden Aleph comes into the world through units of 10 levels of consciousness, which are called Sfirot. The book of Esther is the book of how do we bring God consciousness into this crazy world, right? It's the most relevant book. It's the most descriptive book of the newspapers of today, more than any other book. It's absolutely the headline, right, of most newspapers today. How do we bring, so what's happening? What's the underlying story going on here? Something's starting to shift, and the king places Keter Malchut on her head. So in the story, little girls dress up as queens. What are we talking about? The Sfirot, the 10 units of God consciousness that come into the world, all have names. The highest one, which is what this is pointing to, the Yud is pointing to the very highest Sphera, which is so high that some people say it's just so beyond this world, you don't even really can't say anything about it. That highest Sphera is called Keter. Because Keter means crown. It's the crown of creation. It's the divinity of creation. What's the lowest Sphera called of the 10? Malchut. Malchut. So when you read the book of Esther and you're reading it on the surface, or when you live life and you live it as it appears on the outside, it's a nice story. But what Shimon Bar Yochai says, he says, woe to those who think that the stories of Torah are merely stories. Why does he say woe to them? He says, there are so many better stories in the world. It's not even that great. He's wrong, but not even that great of a story. What is the Torah? It's the garment. It's a garmenting of God. This is the Zohar. The whole Torah is clothing upon layers upon clothing, which is telling a divine story of how God is going to come into the world. And the book of Esther is this world of the Jewish people in that. Right? That's a big part of our job here. Right? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. How do we bring Echad into this crazy world, basically? So it's starting with the book of Esther. Right? Esther is wearing now Keter Malchut, meaning she's embodying Torah. She's embodying the 10 Sfirot. She's walking through the world with a hidden secret of what's going on here. And because she knows that secret of what's going on here, she starts to evoke the transformation. What's the root of Esther? The root of Esther, I'm going to say, is Sarah Imenu, is the first mother of the Jewish people. How do I see Esther hinted at in Sarah Imenu? What's Sarah Imenu's first name in the Torah? Not first name, but the first way she's called in the Torah?
Sarai.
What is Sarai? It's the Sar of the Yud. Sarai is the song, the minister, the seeing. This word means many things. Sar means to see. It means to be a minister. It means to sing. Right? She's the Sar of the Yud. She's the one who's bringing Yud into the world. Sarah brings the Yud into the world. How long does Sarah live?
127.
This is what I'm teaching you now. It says Rabbi Akiva students were falling asleep once, and he brings this midrash so that he could wake them up. Okay? You guys don't look asleep, but she lived 127 years. How many countries did Ahasuerus and then with Esther rule over? 127. Okay? So the 127 is saying what Sarah brought into the world, because when the Yud is brought into the world, it never leaves. In other words, we're not talking about learning history when we're learning about Sarah Imenu or Esther. When we're talking about bringing Yud into the world, that's beyond time. Because God created the world with the letters, meaning before there was even time, there were letters. So if he's bringing us a Yud, he's bringing us something eternal. So Sarah was eternal. She brought the Yud into the world through her years of her life. And Esther brings it into the physical world, into 127 promises. The consciousness of Esther and Sarah starts to spread through the whole world. If you even just play with the numbers, 127, what do you get?
10.
There's no end to how mathematically, precise the Torah is. Okay, 127 is 10. okay, these two tens maybe are the yud of, I just saw it now, maybe the yud of Sar, the yud of this world, please.
Well, they're also the yud and the aleph, because when the years of Sarah are described, it's me'ashana, me'asrim, shana, me'sheva, shani.
Yes.
When the years of Achashverosh are described, it's sheva, shani, me'asrim, shani.
The opposite? Unbelievable.
Wow.
You were seeing these opposites. I never saw that. That is so beautiful. That is unbelievable. So Sarah is the ultimate book of, it's the highest holiday. It's all the book of redemption, right? And now you're seeing the secret of why, because that's the beginning of the story. This is the end of the story, right? When there's such evil in the world and there's a transformation of that evil, beautiful. That's like, whoa, right? Okay. What else do we see in 127? We see that the world of one goes into the world of two, which is the Beth. Spreads out into the world of seven, which is the 7 days of the week. In other words, how do we bring one into this world? It's all there playing in the Hebrew letters. Yes?
Could you just say why her name was changed to Sarah?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot to say about that. I'll say one thing about it. Yud is 10, right? Yud is very high. Yud split into two are hey, hey. Right? Two hays are make yud. She takes one. Sarah, hey. Avram gets the other.
Oh.
It's like mitosis and like she splits her yud because she's the mother, but she knows that there has to be, it has to be more than just her. In other words, when she's Sarai, one of the Gemara teaches, one way to look at it is God is saying, she's mine. She's mine, minister. She's mine. Right? She's so high. Or Avraham is saying, she's mine. When she's Sarah, she becomes everybody's. She becomes universal. So she has to come into the world more. And hey is the letter of creating the world. Yud is the letter of the ultimate reality. Like hey creates the world. That's why we have yud hey, vav hey. We have the yud. How does this work? So look at Sarah and Abraham's story in yud hey, vav hey. God's name. Yud, which now we know a little bit about, comes into hey and hey. Yud, hey and hey. Yud is hey and hey. Yud is five and five. That was what's called hot off the press. I never saw that before. Yud is hey and hey, but Yud is Avraham and Sarah, because Avraham and Sarah are called one. They're called one. Also, I'll show you now my little poster, and then we're going to look at Svatimet. Sarah and Avraham are called one, but Esther and Mordechai are also considered to be one. Okay, so here's just one more play. If you do Gematria, which we're not going to... And you look at the letters of the names Esther, Mordechai, and I'm not going to explain exactly how it works right now because it's a little bit of a different way to do Gematria. You get 13 for Esther, you get 13 for Mordechai. 13 and 13 is 26. So together, their mission together is to bring Yud Hey Vav Hey. Also, Echad, one, and Ahava is, Echad is 13, Ahava is 13. Echad and Ahava is also one. So in the letter Aleph, you have all of this too. You have oneness, you have love, you have Esther and Mordechai, you have Avram and Sarah, you have Kevav, Kevav. Okay? So, now we're going to do a little text study on one more verse of the book of Esther. The verse where Haman says his famous line, because one of the things that is true, that I've learned from many of my teachers, is that our those who are against us, our enemies, actually know a lot about who we are. Right? Like the Russians knew that we shouldn't study Hebrew. They put us in jail for studying Hebrew. Why in the world would they put us in jail for studying Hebrew? They know. They know the power of Torah. They know the power of Hebrew. So Haman knew who we were. They say Haman and Mordechai were together in Eretz Yisrael. There's all kind of history about who Haman is and who Mordechai is politically. But Haman very well knew the power of the Jewish people. And he knew that the power of Jewish people was that they were one. He knew that they were one. He knew that they were united. He knew the secret aleph of the Jewish people. So what's the verse, that the famous verse that really begins the beginning of his evil plot? What does he say in chapter 3? He says to the king, he says, yes, Yeshna, I'm just trying to find the verse because, sorry, it's just hard to, this is not an easy, one second.
Verse 8.
Thank you. Okay, verse 8. Would you like to read it for us, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
English
And Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered and separate among the peoples throughout all the provinces of your kingdom. And their laws differ from those of every people, and they do not keep the king's laws.
Okay, I'm really happy you read that in English.
I wanted to read it.
But I'm really happy because let's look at the, how does the English translate? Yeshno am echad. Yeshno am echad.
Could you just say what the letter is that signifies a?
Chet. Chet.
Sorry, chapter 3, verse Chet?
Yes, it's on page 411 on the left, about in the middle. Chapter 4. Oh, no, we're on the. Yeah, so it's about right here. Vayomer Haman, Vamelech HaKashverosh. Yeshna. Verse Chet. 8. Oh, you're in the wrong one. Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Sorry.
No problem. So, Yeshna Amichad. How would you, can you remind me your name? I'm sorry.
Ronnie.
How would you translate Yeshna Amichad if you weren't looking at the English?
There's one nation.
Yeah. There's one. Echad, the word echad. That's like ding, ding, ding. That's like the code of this, what he is saying. He's saying there's one nation. How would I translate it in English?
There's
a certain people. Okay, guys, you have to realize. They just closed. They say when the Torah was translated into Greek, 3 days of darkness came into the world. But why are they saying that? They're saying it because we just don't see all the light of the Torah when we don't see. We're just missing the point here. The point is, the real point of this book is Yeshno. There is Echad. There is this people who are Echad. We are Echad, meaning we carry the secret Echad of God in the world. That's why we have to unify as Jewish people. That doesn't mean we have to have the same opinions, by the way, right? Because we know that one can be diverse. But Yeshno Am Echad, there is a people that are one. But what's the problem with the people that are one, according to Haman? Mifuzar Mifurad, which means what? They're scattered and separated. Scattered means, the rabbis teach, scattered wouldn't have been such a problem. Okay, they were in Galut, that's okay. But they were separated, meaning they were disconnected from each other. That's where their weakness is. This is all the teachings about Haman and Haman energy. And what Haman energy is the desire to cover the letter Aleph. If you look at the stories of Amalek, who Haman comes from, in the story of Shmuel, you see that there's a hand on the throne of God. You have to go deeply into it. Basically, it means there's something, they want to cover Aleph. They do not want Aleph to be in the world. They do not want God to be in the world. They do not want Judah to be in the world. That's what they're vitally opposed to, right? So you see, their weakness is if they're not one, we can actually attack. The only way there's room for attack is our disconnection. If we're connected, it's like the vacuum is sealed, there's no room. Okay, so that's our work, right? This is our work. When were we at our height of being Amichad? When? Okay, you might see David Melech or Shlomo Melech. Historically, we had a moment of Tevayit Rishon. There was 40 years of some kind of... That's yes, I would give that possibility, but even more. Maybe that's more, but even more. Where is the moment of Achi?
Oh, Revelation.
Yes. Harsinai, what does it say? Vayichan neged ahar. The people of Israel camped in the singular by the mountain. Rashi says, Ishachad Levachad. At the moment of Har Sinai, when we heard Anochi, we heard the Aleph, we actually became the Aleph. What happened, according to Svatamet, is that Anochi was implanted in our souls. We had a transformation of who we are. And the Aleph of unity was put in us. It's called Razadechad. It's called the secret oneness of the Jewish people. So at Har Sinai, we were one. Meaning, what's the secret of our oneness? Torah. Torah is the secret of our oneness. That's why the book of Purim, Esther, is about receiving Torah. It's about receiving Torah from love. Because we are one. So if we're not one, if we're outside, if we're disconnected, right? So the Torah unifies us. So now we will learn one teaching of Svatamet. Maybe we'll do one stretch before, just so people can make sure that they're going to stay awake. Svatamet was called, Harav, his name, Yehuda Ari Lev Alter. This is a very well-used poster, but I love it, so I'm going to show you. Okay. He was called Svatamet. He lived in Gor, Poland. Anyone here from Poland? Anyone's family from Poland? So they might have been related to the Gor. A lot of times I'll teach this and somebody will say, oh, I'm a Gor Hasid and I never learned. So he was called Svatamet because he was very much about Emet, about truth. He was the third in the lineage of what's called the Ger Hasidim. They were Zionists. They understood the connection to the land of Israel. His grandfather, who he learned from, was called the Rav Yitzchak Meir Alter. He was the first of the Ger Hasidim. They're a very big sect. Okay? So the book that I've been actually very, very immersed in for the better part of the last 25 years is this. It's called Svatamet. And it's on the Parsha, and it's on the Chagim. I teach it every week. I teach it online. I live with this book because I have an online class. I'm happy to tell everybody about everything I do when we're done. I have an online class because I teach in America Torah yoga a couple times a year. And my students want to keep learning Svatamet, so we do Svatamet. And I bring yoga connections on. Svatamet. There, see? This always happens to me. Every time I teach. Do you know anything about it?
About Ger Hasid.
About your great-grandfather, about his life as a Ger Hasid?
I'll tell you later. Yeah.
I'm sure it's not always simple, okay? But
okay, never.
It's not always simple, but it almost always happens to me that when I teach a new group of people and I teach Svatamet, somebody says, I'm a Ger Hasid. I just haven't discovered about myself yet. I wish I could. But I can't. But so we're going to turn to our sources, and we're going to look at. Okay. So what we're going to do is, one second. I'm going to have you guys do chavruta for 10 minutes. We're going to stand up and stretch first for a moment, and then we're going to do 10 minutes of chavruta. Then we're going to learn it together. Okay. So come to stand. Come to stand. Just bring your feet together. I mean, if you really don't want to do it, you're not obligated. I don't want to force anybody, but I heard some interest in it. I was a student at Pardes for 5 years. I learned here for 10 hours a day for 5 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. I mean, that's not 100% true. For 3 years, I learned 10 hours a day. For the fourth and fifth year, I learned half day and taught half day. But after 5 years, I created Torah Yoga. Why? Because I...
You were in this physical space?
No, we were in the original... It was on the Chokad, and then it was somewhere else. I began to feel like I was walking around from here to here, floating.
Yeah.
And I had so many torps who came going around in my head that I had to bring it down into my body. It's a whole journey. It's a whole story. I write about it in my book. Right? But I was very immersed, and then I said, to be put into the body, and there's lots of reasons why. Okay, so let's open our bodies for a moment. Svatamet says the Torah is written in your body. So take your hands forward, interlace your thumbs, spread those nice fingers of yours, and extend your hands up. Stretch long, stretch well, press your feet to the floor, stretch your hands up. So, remind me your name. Melinda. Belinda teaches letters in yoga. So here you definitely have the letter Vav. So you have your feet on the earth, your hands to the heavens. Upper you, lower you. Breathe. See if you can connect your feet and your hands through your spine. Can you lengthen by lifting your thumbs up? As you lift your thumbs up, can you be chiburd? Can you be connected to the spine? And breathe. Let energy build in the body. Let awareness grow. Take the hands out to the sides. Bring them behind you, interlace your fingers all the way to the ends, and then roll the shoulders back and work to create a bit of an opening in your chest. Breathe into that opening. Notice what's happening. This is an exercise. This is opening up consciousness. That's what yoga is. Consciousness of wisdom in the body. So take your hands back, open the heart, and breathe. And release. Take your feet a little bit apart. We'll just create a little space. Press your feet to the floor. Extend your hands out to the side. How wide can you make your chest? How open can you make your heart? Right? Mishachad levachad. We're one people, one heart. So let's feel our hearts. Stretch your hands up. Spread. Turn the palms to face up.
Shifa. Inhale, leash, open. Stick your hands parallel to each other. As you stretch your hands up, see with your right hand, can you stretch your right rib cage up? With your left hand, can you stretch your left rib cage? Can you do both at the same time? Can you open up the consciousness? They say the spirits are spread throughout the body. The right arm is chesed, left arm is gevurah. It's all in the body. Stretch up. Take the hands behind you, interlace your hands the other way. And then roll your shoulders back, open your chest. Breathe. Notice, invite, energy, aleph. Aleph is also energy. It's the energy of life. And release. And roll your shoulders back. And roll your shoulders back. Okay, so what I'm going to invite you to do is take 10 minutes. This is, I'm throwing you into the water here. We have a descendant of the Bor Chasid. I'm not sure if anyone's learned it. Take a look at where it says the one on the second one on the page. There was a Jewish man, Yehudi. Just read through the English or the Hebrew. Make whatever sense you have, and then we're going to learn it together. Just want you to get a sense of it first, a taste of it.
If anyone has questions, well, you can ask, but you can talk, and we'll come back together soon. Okay, I think we're going to come back together. I feel like it's I don't want to be scattered in Mifuzar. Okay, I heard a few little nice questions and thoughts floating through the room. It's always so nice. Okay, so. So let's start with, let's go through this fun a bit. Let's go through it in the Hebrew. I'm going to read it in the Hebrew. We're going to go through line by line. We're going to see if there's what we can get out of our journey here. Ish Yehudi Yechidi. So I heard the question about this. What is this saying? Ish Yehudi Yechidi. What does this mean? Ish Yehudi Yechidi. There was a Jewish man. It's talking about Mordechai. That's how Mordechai is introduced to us. Good. Already. Everyone's, it's so funny. Everybody's name, the way you're sitting, is hidden. It's really not coincidental. No, the book of Esther is... It's like everybody's... Oh, because it's like, I love that you have name tags, but I'm just going to call you all Esther. Okay. They have to make them. That's a little glitch in the program. Okay. You know, just it's okay. I just like to know people's names, you know. So, Susan. Susan. So, you're. So tell me what you just said. I forgot.
Well, it's Mordechai.
It's Mordechai.
Is he referred to in the Megillah?
No, he's not. This is the introduction of Mordechai. It's not. He's not called Yechidi. It's the Midrash.
Oh, okay.
It's the Midrash. I don't remember which Midrash. I'm sorry. It's in the Midrash that says Yehudi Yechidi. They're playing with the letters. You know, the hey and the hey.
No, I just noticed the next word is haya, which
yes.
Is, well, only, I was going to say it's 10, but it's 20, but it's the yud and the hey.
Oh, yeah. We have the hey, yud, hey. We have the hey, yud, hey. So now your eyes are open. Okay, so how are we introduced? They're in Galus. The Jews are in Galut. There's very many different opinions about this book, okay? From this end to that end. There's opinions that they're really assimilated. That they were all at the king's feast eating everything that was there, right? They don't have their customs anymore. There are also opinions that they were really keeping by their ways, right? But this was a time, who said 50 years? You said, right, that 50 years after the destruction of the first temple. When does the book of Esther happen? It happened 70 years after the destruction of the first temple, when... There had been a prophecy, forget which prophet, sorry, that the Jews would return and build the second temple after 70 years. Okay, the first temple was built by Shlomo. There was a prophecy when the second temple would be rebuilt. There's also a prophecy about the third temple. The thing about the third temple, there was never given a time. Okay? There was never given a time for it. But the second one there was, 70 years. During that period, Koresh, the king of Persia, was good to the Jews, right? And he said, you can go back and build your temple. They start building the temple, and then there's politics that are going on. they decided to halt the building of the temple. That's one of the reasons they say Mordechai was in Shushan, because Mordechai was there to move forward diplomatic relations with the king of Shushan to get him to permit the temple to be built in Jerusalem. Sounds familiar. So, but it says, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habirah. Even before we get to the Yehudi, why do they first tell us he's a Jew? He was a Jew. He was not assimilated. Depends how you look at it. There's really deep ways to learn about Mordechai. But let's just take it more on the pshat. He was still connected to that, what's called Pintala Yid, right? That Jewish one point in his soul. But the Midrash says Yechidi. Why? So let's go on. It says, Ki kishe b'nei Yisrael na'asin aguda achat, ein la'amalek shlita bahem. When the people of Israel make one aguda, one gathering, there's no shlita, there's no control, there's no power. In other words, the fighting is not direct. The fighting is by being unified, right? The unification becomes our greatest power. When does Amalek attack? Berifidim. Rifidim is the story in Shemot. Right after we leave Egypt, pretty soon after we leave Egypt and we've gotten the manna, there's a lot of grumbling in the camp. Amalek attacks at Rifidim, a place called Rifidim. Wow. Oh, man. Never saw that. I've never heard anyone given that teaching. Beautiful. Carol, never seen that teaching before. No. There it is. Okay, it's not in the right order, but it doesn't matter.
Oh.
It's okay. The letters are mixed up, but the Torah works that way.
No, it's
Parud. Erithidim. No, the pay and the resh are mixed. It doesn't matter, though. It's resh pay. They do that. It's the same letters, meaning they're made up of the same idea. Okay, so that's a new one. A lot of chidushim coming out today. Rifidim also means they were weak. They were rafui yadayim. What do you mean? He raises his two hands up. Yudim. He raises his hands up. What is the midrash? This is why I do it in Torah yoga. Okay, we won't do it now, but a lot of raising the hands up. Why? What does the Mishnah say? It says, and every school children in Israel learns this at age kindergarten as a song. Really? The hands of Moshe make or break war? What is that saying? It says when Moshe's hands are up, they beat Amalek. When his hands are down, they don't beat. The Amalek gets strong. What are the hands up signifying? The Midrash says when your hands are up, your heart is up and you're looking towards God. When your heart is up looking towards God, you're victorious. When your hands are down and you're despair, that is Amalek. What is the gematria of Amalek? The gematria of Amalek is doubt, safek. Amalek is safek. It's when we have doubt, where we don't see the Aleph, where we don't really believe in God, that's the enemy enters in, right? Am I saying this is like being an olive?
Yeah. No.
I don't know if it's being an olive.
It's like being Emmet.
It's like being Emmet. Why?
Because you said my hands were up.
Yes.
That was the top. Reaching for the
That top. Was the top. Okay. Yeah. So it's being in the sphere of, it's reaching to the top. I think we could play with a lot of, I don't think it means one thing. Okay. It means a lot of things. But, so we have here, Rak b'Rifidim, when they were in Rifidim, which we now know from Carol means when they were in the realm of separation. Why? Because the weak ones were left behind. They left the weak ones behind. He attacked them from behind. Lachen hilshin haman am echad mefuzar mefurad. Therefore, Haman talked badly. He spread this gossip around. Hilshin means like he was telling the tale. They're scattered. That's their weakness. Shekol koach shalahem ha'achdut. This is what we've been learning. We're just seeing it in Sfat Emet. All of their koach is in their achdut. All of their koach is in their aleph, right? In that hidden aleph. Ve'ata he mifurad, but now they're scattered. They're separated. We use the word separated from mifurad. Ha'emet kein haya al yedei ha'chata'im. Nitorer koach amalek ve'eino meniach lahem lehitached. He says it was through the, what's a chet? I translate it as missing the mark because that's what it means, right? When they were out of alignment with, yeah, that's what chet really is. You're not really aligned with the matara. The matara is focusing on God. The matara is bringing oneness into the world, following the ways of the Torah. When you're not in line with that, then there's room. Okay? Koach Amalek wakes up. There's an awakening of the koach of Amalek. So what's the tikkun in the book of Esther? What is Esther, in her great wisdom, together with Mordechai, who we're going to see is the secret of oneness, Esther says, Lech knos et kol ha-yehudim, which means what?
Gather.
Gather the kenes, Beit Knesset. Bring him into Beit Knesset. That's all we have to do.
Oh,
hi.
I'm sorry.
You could join us for the end. Okay. Lech knos et kol ha-yehudim. We're not looking right in the text right now. We're just seeing what parts of it he brings. Lehikahel v'la'amod al nafsham. Lehikahel. What is lehikahel? Kahal. Kahal is community, right? When a lot of times in the when Moshe speaks, it talks about Moshe brings us all into kahal. What's the idea of kahal when we're talking about the Jewish? How would you define community when you're talking about the Jewish people? Okay, oneness. Pardon? Exactly like a kehillah. So what's a kehillah in your world? It's your community. It totally revolves around your shul. It totally revolves around your shul. Right? I've been living in Israel for 35 years. Right? It took me until now, pretty much, to realize that it's a little bit different here. Well, in many ways. But I mean in this way.
Yeah.
I can tell you a lot of ways, but in this way. Because I didn't have that same feeling. I would go to shul here, and it didn't feel like my shul growing up, where I was like, that was my life. That was my community. But here it was like, it is and it isn't. And then finally I had a friend, that is actually a product of exile. Because you have to have that. Because if you're scattered, you better have a place to gather. Because that's how you're going to remember your oneness. But when you're, the whole idea of Israel, which is Reshit Tzmichat Gulatena, which is the beginning of the Geulah for the whole Jewish people, all of Israel is a Kehillah, which is really the higher truth. Because the higher truth is, when we're talking about Kehillah with a small kuf is Temple of Aaron and St. Paul, whatever your community, great, thank God, right? But when we're talking about Kehillah in this context, we're talking about the soul of the Jewish people. We're talking about the one soul that stood at Sinai. At Sinai, we had one soul, meaning doesn't matter where you are. This is where every single one is part of the oneness of the Jewish people. I heard somebody mention the Holocaust. I'm going to throw it in here now. Okay? Because what was the evil? Okay. Without opening up the hole. What was the evil? What was the wisdom of the evil of that system? They understood that they had to get every Jew. Why? Because they went into towns where there was only two Jews. Two. Because they couldn't leave anyone. Because they understood if there was one, that everyone contains the whole. They understood that it wasn't about numbers, it was about something deeper. Right? So they knew that it had to be everyone. So this is where it's coming from. So he's saying, she understood that. She says, Knoset Kol Yudim, bring them all together into a kehillah, into a oneness. And then it tells us about Mordechai. It says, Hakol al yidei hakinus v'hakehillah. Everything is about the gathering and the becoming one. Coming to Israel, learning Torah. It's all part of what she's telling us to do. Mordechai HaTzadik, Icha Otam, Mordechai HaTzadik had the power. This is where we get into a little bit of chassidut here in a sense, a chassidic understanding of a tzadik, right? He had the power to unify them. How? How did he have the power to unify them? What does it say? Al yado ki hayalo koach ha'achdut lechen ikra yechidi. He had the power of achdut, right? How? Does anyone want to think about how? How might we understand? What does that mean that he had the power of achdut?
He was a leader.
He was a leader.
He was a unifying leader.
Yeah. But let's.
So he understood the He had the consciousness of the importance. Yeah, he held the consciousness of the importance of them being one, and that consciousness has the power of itself. There's a concept called neshama klalit in the Torah. What does neshama klalit mean? It means a soul that's actually a general soul. It's a general soul. Avraham was considered to be a neshama klalit. In other words, everything Avraham was not an individual person who did things for his own sake. When he sends Sarah to the king in Egypt, you have to study it carefully, God willing, you know, I've been learning this. He wasn't an individual for his own sake. He was a neshama klalit, meaning the gedula of Avraham is that his soul was the soul of all of the Jewish people. Every Jewish person is contained inside of Avraham's soul. Mordechai was the same. Moshe is the same. Right? The gedolim are called neshama klalit. That's why in the Hasidic movement, they started creating this world of tzaddik, which has some remnants of this. The world of the tzaddik is, if that tzaddik has the consciousness of this oneness, he will influence the others. There will be an influence because it wakes you up. It's like sees like. Hmm? A general soul. There's a hard to translate it exactly. Klal. Klal Yisrael is from the word kol. Kol means allness, the allness of Israel. So Mordechai was a general soul, meaning his energy, his consciousness was able to unify. Right? When you come into the presence of a tzaddik, it can influence. And he had that influence. Him and Esther together were the achdut. Okay, so let's go and see how it goes. V'chen nikra yechidi. That's why the Midrash says he's yechidi. He was in his essence one. He was an embodiment of the oneness of God. Klal kol yudim. He was embodiment of the wholeness of all Jews. In a place where Jews didn't realize that they were united. V'chein b'kol Purim. This is why Purim becomes higher than Yom Kippur. Have you heard this before? Right? Yom Kippur. Why is Purim so high? Because b'kol Purim, we have the mitzvahs that train us back to this consciousness of oneness. What are the mitzvahs? What are the four mitzvahs of Purim?
Suda.
Yeah. Yeah. So where do we see in those mitzvahs achdut? He's going to talk about it, but let's just say it because we live this life, right? So what is the achdut in those mitzvahs?
We're getting together to read Megillah, unites the community, sending packets.
They all do. I mean, they all do. That's exactly what they are, right? You think you're separate? Your neighbor has no food, or your neighbor needs a little bit of love. Like Shlomo Carbuch would talk about the amount of love that's in a cookie in Mishloach Manot. He would just talk about the incredible love that's in that cookie. He couldn't even to express how much love is in the cookie of a Mishloach. And it's true. I don't know if you guys are part of the mitzvah, if you've done it, right? I remember when I first encountered this mitzvah, when I came to Israel, started studying Torah. It has so much power. Why is it so powerful to receive a cookie from your neighbor? Why? Why? Because it's actually way more than a cookie. We're talking about creating achdut. We're talking about saying, I'm connected to you. It's very interesting because Purim is the only holiday that we don't do on the same day in all of Israel. We do it a day later in Jerusalem. Shushan Purim. It's even the holiday itself is scattered all over the map. And Matanot Yalev Yonim, of course, there's poor people. On that day, you have to say, I'm actually creating unity on that day. So all of the mitzvahs are training us in being healing the separateness. So let's go to the end of the teaching. So he says, Ki b'chol Purim nitorer koch ha'adut, achdut. What happens on Purim? There's an awakening of the power of oneness. This is mystical stuff in a certain way, right? We have to sort of believe that there's something more going on than meets the eye. This isn't chitzoni. You might not see this at your Purim carnival, right? But it's saying there's an awakening of achdut. And we have to know it, at least. Al shem zeh, kavu mitzvot kriya b'tzibur. That's why we read in community. We read in families. Ubizman she habayit. In the time of the temple, I guess it's talking about the second temple, because in the time of the first temple, there was no Purim. Right? Mitachdim mamash b'makom echad. Right? The temple was a place of expression of unity of the Jewish people. Vata b'galut hitasfut kol makom v'makom. So now they're in Galut. Everyone in their place does their Purim. Ubekoch mitzvot elo, mishloach manot, umatanot levionim, hakol ba'avur ha'achdot, achdut. All of the mitzvahs of Purim are really coming to reveal the hidden Aleph. They're really coming to reveal the hidden unity of the Jewish people, which is the redemption of the world. Going back to Meir's statement, let's just connect it, right? The gap between what's real and what's ideal. That's the book of Esther. There's this real world that doesn't look so great. This is the ultimate evil is in this book. The source of all of the genocides are in this book, right? And yet this book is considered to be the time of the Mashiach. This book is considered called the secrets of all redemption. Because the secret of redemption is getting to know the letter Aleph, is really looking for the letter Aleph. So we'll just finish with, I want to just finish with a beautiful, beautiful teaching, and I'll just share it with you, which is by another great mystic from Tzfat in the Middle Ages, in the 15th century, 16th century, where he's talking about who Jacob was. So we have Jacob, we have Moshe. What does he say? Jacob, it says, Vayetze Jacob. In our Parsha, I'm just going to read it, the second to the last teaching. The Parsha says, Vayetze Yaakov, Vav Yud Tzadik Aleph. He's going to play with the letters. He says, Katav HaGaon HaKadosh, the great holy one, who's called HaMigale Amukot, the one who reveals hidden things, named Natan Shapira in Sfat. He said, Vayetze is a Rashi Tevot. It's an acronym for what? Vayar. And he saw Yaakov, Jacob, Tsurat, the shape, Aleph. He saw the shape of the Aleph. Jacob's about to go into Galut. He's leaving. He's going into Galut. He becomes the father of Galut. He goes for 22 years, but he goes with the word Vayetze, meaning, Hainu, Shebekol Tafuchot Chayav, in all of the upheavals of his life, with Lavan and with his daughters and with all of his troubles with his brother, lo ra'a lenochach enav etzura lo tzura. He didn't see in front of his eyes, not the shape of any lo tzarot. Sorry, no troubles and no difficulties. What did he see? Lo Esav, lo Lavan. He didn't really see Esav. He didn't really see Lavan. Lo Dina. He didn't see Dina. He didn't see Joseph. But what did he see? He saw the tzurat ha'aleph. He saw the shape of the aleph. Alufav shel olam, the master of the world. That's one of the names of God. Ubekol asher karahu, and in everything that happened to him, like the book of Esther, that looked like it was just happening, right? Yada she'ein od milvado. He knew there was nothing other than God. Efes zulato. There's nothing other than God. Ve'al kein haya Hashem imo l'shomro b'kol asher halach. Therefore, God was with him everywhere he went. So he took with him Aleph consciousness. He left the land of Israel, but he went with eyes. When you're on Purim, I wore a mask of Hebrew letters, because it's like to see the world through Hebrew-colored letters. So he saw the world through the shape of the letter Aleph. He saw everything that happened. How can we find the Aleph? It's a tall order, right? But this is what really the book of Esther. That's why it's the book that's going to last beyond the prophets, because it's the book that goes to the deepest level of evil and shows us that ultimately we're going to rediscover and we're going to really reveal to the world that there's actually is one God, and that's a God of Echad and Ahava. It's a God of love, right? It's a God of oneness.
Thank you.
So, does anyone want a thought, a question?
You mentioned that sleep is Galut.
That Galut is an aspect of falling asleep, yeah. Well, partly here, there are probably other sources, but I was playing with it based on the words here where it says, Yeshno Amechad, Yashnu, they fell asleep. What do we say every Friday night? Hit orari, hit orari. Wake up, wake up, because your light is coming. Kiba or. By the way, or is Aleph. It's also connected to the oneness. Wake up means being aware. The opposite of waking up means you're not aware. So when you wake up to consciousness, if you're galut, meaning lack of God consciousness, meaning slumber.
So maybe Jacob is Baal.
Because he falls asleep.
Falls asleep and then he wakes up and he's out.
Yes, he says that he's exactly Jacob and Baal. He wait. It says there, Vayikatz. It says it a couple of times. He starts waking up. Anochi, achen anochi b'makom hazeh. No, Hashem b'makom hazeh anochi lo yadati. What does that mean? Listen to this verse, right? He says that. Not just anochi, but anochi is the first word of the Ten Commandments, right? Which he's starting to wake up to the Aleph. Exactly. Beautiful connection. So galus is slumber. Galus is slumber. Right? And of course, Galut is outside Israel and Israel, but we're talking about something also very spiritual. We're talking about a level that can be anywhere, right?
I have a friend who wrote an article on sleep in the Bible. She's a sleep specialist.
Oh, wow.
And it would be interesting to go back.
Wonderful. Beautiful. Beautiful. Please, if you want to send it around, I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
So,
this is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.